The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. We'll get you from point A to point B. But if you're looking to get to point C, sorry, buddy, you're on your own. But there is a bus to point C that stops every half hour, in case you're interested. Now, here's your Ralph Cramden of the airwaves, Eric Metaxas.
Ralph Cramden of the airwaves. Did he say that? Is that a thing? I don't know what that is. Folks, you know this is the show about everything. We talk about pretty much everything. Today, we're talking about fiction, specifically about a delightful book that I've just read called A Gentleman in Moscow. The author, Amor Towles, could not be with us in the studio, so we have his identical twin brother, also named Amor Towles. Amor Towles, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
And thank you for sitting in for your identical twin brother.
Right.
We were talking in the previous show about this book, and during the break I brought up Nabokov, because reading this book made me think of Vladimir Nabokov. I think I read every single book of his at least once in the 80s when I was trying to find myself as a writer, and just falling in love with the way he wrote, but also his attitude, which was anti-Freud and anti-communist all the way. And I feel like he had an appreciation for the finer things, the aristocratic things. And a lot of that is in this book, A Gentleman in Moscow. So did you read a lot of Nabokov?
I have read a lot of Nabokov. And I've read a lot of the Russian greats. Obviously, Nabokov is writing ultimately in English, which is an amazing thing for him to have been writing in his second language.
He wrote in three languages.
Yeah, Joseph Conrad are really the two who came to English later in life and mastered it. Unlike few novelists, but I think that I am a fan of his. I think that we share a certain sense of humor, that we are building into our writing. We obviously share a love of kind of the 19th century novel. I think in its scope, where there's many characters, many issues being dealt with simultaneously. The sort of not these narrow books. But most importantly, I think what I learned from Nabokov and what I share with him are a love of the sentence. I lay out a story and create people, and I have to make them engaging, interesting, and to tell a tale. But most of the work for me, hours-wise, ends up being trying to perfect one sentence after the next, after the next, after the next. And that is clearly an obsession of his as well. What was the sound of the sentence? What is the image that was chosen? Trying to make sure that you're not saying, using cliches, that you're not dragging through the paragraph.
Well, that's why your book, A Gentleman in Moscow, is so extremely delightful. I, as an appreciator of good writing, and someone who has the ambition to write well myself, on every page, I think I marked something, because the way you put it, I thought, there's no one talks like that. You had to think, you know, in other words, it clearly took time to come up with something that beautiful, that brilliant, that apt, to get it just right. But then to have it not look labored, to have it look like absolutely natural. And I thought, this is something that must have taken a lot of time. And it makes the reading slower because you don't want to miss any of this stuff. At least if you're a careful reader, you can't skim. You wouldn't skim because every page, every paragraph holds delights. And so it did strike me that the writing process, so since I'm a writer, I want to ask you about this. It must have taken a long time because every single paragraph, every page holds all of these obviously crafted delights.
Right. The way I tend to work is I start with a premise, and I'm an outliner. So I will build a very detailed outline before I start writing chapter one. I will design, as when I think of it, I design my book for a year or more before I start writing the first chapter.
Yeah.
And so when I sit down and I'm ready to write chapter one, I know every chapter, every event, every character, and their personality, every setting. I know all that. And ironically, that sounds very controlling or type A or structured, but the reason I do that is because I find that if I do that, it frees me up while I'm writing the chapter to be as inventive as possible, to be as poetic as possible, to let my subconscious start to express itself and put surprises into the sentences.
So you're not one of these people, and I remember John Cheever making fun of this in one of his strange short stories that he published in The New Yorker. You're not one of these people who believes that the characters just take on a life of their own and you kind of follow them around. I mean, there's always going to be some of that, but it is clear that in this book you had to do that. If you hadn't done that, it's kind of like you mentioned Agatha Christie. I mean, if you don't plot it out and figure it out in advance, you're never going to be able to accomplish what you accomplish in
that's,
this book.
I think that in a book like this, that's absolutely true. It requires planning, but you do get the benefit of some of those lovely surprises that you're talking about. The characters aren't necessarily in charge, but I do learn from them, and as I kind of implied in an earlier segment with you. But to sort of stretch that out, as I go across the country, when someone comes to me and says, you know, that sentence or that passage was particularly meaningful to me or insightful or moving, and I wrote it down or I sent it to my daughter or I read it to my wife or what have you. When that happens, 90% of the time, 99% of the time, that is something that it's a thought I would never have in the course of my daily life. I would never give that piece of advice to my child. I wouldn't mention it to my friends. I wouldn't think of it for my own self. That is having created a fictional character who's different than me and put that person in a situation I've never been in. Suddenly, sometimes, that character will look around and say, you know what? Da-da-da-da-da, and make an observation.
Yeah.
And when that happens, it's like I get to the end of the observation and I hit a period and I'm like, oh my God, well done, Count.
Right.
You really nailed that one. You know, it's a sort of a, it and comes it, as if I'd never, and,
right.
as
and
if
Count,
I'd never
of
thought
course,
of it
is the protagonist of A Gentleman in Moscow. But listen, I will, you know, at the risk of driving you away with flattery, another thing that I noticed about this book, which is remarkable, is the wisdom in this book. Another term I wouldn't throw around lightly. There's tremendous wisdom, observational wisdom, human wisdom that is pretty rare, I think, in contemporary fiction. But this book is loaded with it. And I was just wondering, did you grow up thinking that way, or does this come from studying the classics? You mentioned you've read all the classics over the years. But there's a moral vision at the heart of this. There's right and wrong. And that comes across, and nobility, behaving as a gentleman. The title is A Gentleman in Moscow. That's very important. I mean, there's just so much there. So I think that when you read this book, you come away, if I may say so, wiser. That's not typical today in reading.
Well, there's no question about it that I come out of the humanities tradition that you're describing, and you know, the Western humanities tradition, which is in part Judeo-Christian, but also is drawing on the Greek philosophers, on the Age of Enlightenment thinkers, on the Roman Stoics, and having read those people with great interest and admiration, I think it's quite natural for even as a narrativist, as a storyteller, to be interested in what does this mean? What is, as you say, what's the right and wrong of these actions? And can we make a distinction? Sometimes it's impossible to make a distinction between right or wrong in, our actions, and sometimes that's the insight that you come to through the writing process. But I am interested in writing. I have great respect for certain minimalist writers in the American tradition, like Hemingway or Raymond Carver. When I set out to write this book, I knew it was not going to be minimalist. It was going to be maximalist.
Right.
It was going to be drawing in painting, music, food. But as you say, sort of the history of thought around human interaction, which I find very compelling.
Well, again, it's the Western canon. It's the Western tradition. And I think we're living in a time when that is, if not out of fashion. That's as out of fashion as capitalism was during the time in which this book takes place. And so it's a really revolutionary act in a way to draw on that tradition as much as you do. Earlier I mentioned that your writing reminded me in its moral vision and celebration of a kind of nobility of character. It reminded me very, very much of the writing of Mark Helprin, who's also been on this show. But it's rare in our fiction, and I'm just so grateful for you. We'll be right back, folks. I'm talking to Amor Towles. The book is A Gentleman in Moscow.
Words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. As you know, following Christ is a lifelong pursuit. It requires perseverance, and practice makes permanent. A new study Bible for today is the third edition of the Life Application Study Bible. Read by more than 20 million people, it's the best-selling study Bible in the world. The Life Application Study Bible is not a Bible for a season. It's not for a New Year's resolution. It's not just for hard times. It's a Bible for all times, with more than 10,000 newly updated and expanded notes, charts, maps, timelines, profiles, and more. The Life Application Study Bible is the most complete single-volume Bible ever compiled. It is just what you need to apply biblical teaching to your everyday life. As you train for the race God calls each of us to, the Life Application Study Bible is the companion and coach you need by your side every single step of the way. For who you were, who you are, and who God has called you to become for all times. Learn more at lifeapplication.com. That's lifeapplication.com.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to get your house ready for the winter so you can sit back and enjoy the holidays. Home Advisor can help get you started. Home Advisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. Home Advisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. So why wait? Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started on your next project.
Home Advisor.
There is a battle being fought right here in America. The radical left is trying to silence anyone who disagrees with them. They want to shut you up.
I'm Dennis Prager. There's no more important issue facing America today. If we can't speak freely, we can't be heard.
But one film is fighting back. No Safe Spaces.
Every American should see this.
See No Safe Spaces, only in theaters, rated PG-13. Go to NoSafeSpaces.com for tickets.
Hey folks, the team at MyPillow is grateful for you this holiday season, and they're so grateful they have an amazing offer. Buy one, get one free on their incredible sheet sets. Mike Lindell has come out with the world's most comfortable bed sheets. He finally found the best cotton in the world in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. His new Giza Dream bed sheets are made with this long staple cotton, and he guarantees they'll be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own. He says, the first night you sleep on my sheets, you'll never want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream Sheets are available in a variety of colors, and like all of Mike's products, they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Right now, you can buy one, get one free by calling 800-978-3057 and use the promo code ERIC or METAXAS for a limited time. You can buy one, get one free, plus free shipping. Call 800-978-3057 or go to MyPillow.com, MyPillow.com, but make sure you use the promo code ERIC or METAXAS. ERIC or METAXAS, go for it.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. 844-45-BIBLE.
Hey folks, we needed a little cheap trick. There it is. I'm talking about fiction, about the novel A Gentleman in Moscow with the author Amor Towles. He's here with me. Let's keep talking about we mentioned Nabokov. I mentioned Solzhenitsyn, Mark Helprin. You have a moral vision. You have a lot in common with Mark Helprin's writing. Are you familiar with his writing? I couldn't help but think you must be.
Winter's Tale, it was a great favorite of mine when I read it, you know, as a younger man.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, incredible. In fact, that came out just before, you must have been in high school when that came out.
Yeah, that's probably when I read it.
I was in college when it came out. I still can't get over that we were at Yale at the same time. In Calhoun, you know, it's no longer named Calhoun.
No, formerly known as.
Formerly known as Calhoun College. We ate the same food. The thing about your writing, as we were just touching on, is that it recalls a world that's lost. And that's part of the theme, I guess, of A Gentleman in Moscow, that there's a world that's going away. And you actually talk about that, about the passage of time. You must be widely read in the classics because you refer to them so much. I mean, I was impressed with your, you know, references to Homer and Virgil and on and on and on. Is that what gave you a foundation for becoming the writer you are? I have to guess that that is a big part of it.
Yes, I think there's no question about that. And I look at some of my heroes as a younger man, like reading Thoreau was such a revelation for me. I just couldn't believe that, you know, page after page, it was this incredible thought process being shared and this eloquence, this sort of magical way of putting things. And he's drawing from this incredible command of, in his case, not only with the Western tradition, but some Eastern tradition as well, and science and his close observation of his neighbors. And that became sort of a template that, yes, if you're going to try to write an idea in a rich way, you want to bring to your advantage as much of the tradition as possible to help sharpen the way that you put things and to bring them to life too. That's sort of a funny thing about it, is that by drawing on some traditional references, you can add a spark to the writing, you know, because the epics of Homer are amazing stories. And so for them to sort of resonate with the work that you're doing, I think is terrific.
And you're writing. There are many cases where it could be pretentious, but you keep it from being pretentious. You're doing something. I've always valued this as something I try to do in my own writing, where you're challenging the reader, and maybe sometimes using a word or something that the reader might be unfamiliar with, but you're not doing it in a way that's disdainful of the reader. You're sort of drawing them a little higher. You're calling them higher and making certain references which they may or may not get.
Yes, I do. In my editing process, one of the things I strive for is to have respect for my reader such that I'm going to take out sort of obvious explanations. I'm not going to sort of beat a drum over and over to get my point across. I am not going to abandon the perfect word if it seems like it's a word that is going to make someone turn to a dictionary. I don't mind somebody turning to a dictionary if it's the right word at the right time.
I turn to the dictionary via my computer at least three times when I was reading the book, at least three times. And it's always a joy to discover a word because I feel like, well, I know all the words now. And there were a few words. There's one word, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it, which I think you made up, but it's you coined the word. It's not like I would say, oh, that's wrong. It was one of those words. I think it had to do with the mattress. And you said it was like flumfer, or do you remember the word?
Well, yeah, and you're right. It probably was made up because I'm trying to describe this poor gentleman dragging a mattress down a hall and trying to move it into a bedroom. And
flump.
Yeah, exactly.
Flumping.
Right, because it is. It's one
of
those things.
But that's genius to be able to invent a word. You think that people can't do that anymore. A short word. It's not a long word. It's a short word, but flumping. And I thought, I don't know if that word's in the dictionary. Maybe it is, but I thought it is utterly apt, and I just, you know, I had to applaud that word and you, but there are many words in here, and there's many references. The reference to the song Yes, We Have No Bananas.
Yes, right.
You do it in a very arch way, oblique way, which makes it all the funnier, but I'm imagining, you know, some 25-year-old reading this and having no idea
what
you're referring to.
Yeah, no, that's true. Take some of that risk, yes.
And sometimes you do say things in foreign languages without translating them, or there's no footnote. And again, that's a fine line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, when do you do that, and when do you...
You know, it's one of those things in a... you're right. There is one page in the book, which is in Italian, because the Count is kind of hiding in the room of some Italian guests. And I sort of wrestled with how should this scene be read? And sort of in the end, I think it kind of adds to, in that sense, the comedy of that scene. Because, you know, this sort of notion of if you had snuck into the room of someone in a foreign language, you know, what you'd hear was, you know, the shock and the anxiety, but in the foreign language.
Right.
And I felt like, yeah, that's what the Count should be exposed to in that moment.
But the Count knows enough, I think, to say arrivederci.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly, right. Which might be the only thing that we all know in Italian, right?
Right.
Goodbye. You know, I'm
and
out
you,
of here.
You also have what, to my mind, is an original way of using ellipses. I have never seen ellipses used as you do, which is just to indicate it, to indicate a pause in the conversation. Had you seen that before? I have literally never seen that before.
Oh, you're talking about when two people
when
speak, for instance?
Two people are talking, you'll put in an ellipsis, and I thought to myself, that's just brilliant because it indicates a moment of no speaking.
Yeah, and I did it in Rules of Civility for the first time. I had never seen it done myself, but I was struggling with this point that you're making, which is that two people are going back and forth quickly, and there's suddenly this moment between two comments where there's a pause. And I felt like saying, and then he paused, was the worst way of achieving that goal. And so I thought, you know, what if it was just three dots in a line? And we kind of all understand that, yeah, right, nothing is being said for a second.
But it's original to you.
Yeah, and it's been useful to me.
But it's really brilliant because to think that no one has ever thought of that before and that people have been stuck with writing and then he paused or he stared at the window thinking or whatever it was that you could do, but to put in a simple ellipsis, and I guess you don't do it in a way that comes across as modernist pretentious. In other words, you get a lot of this kind of stuff that's very modernist and pretentious, you know, whether it's Gertrude Stein or James Joyce or whatever. They're sort of playing with the forms, but they draw your attention to it.
Yeah.
You don't. You just kind of use it so perfectly that the reader understands immediately what it feels very natural.
I have the benefit from learning from them. And I am a great fan of many of the experimental writers, but I'm probably a bigger fan of the 19th century novelists. And so I've tried to take some of the groundbreaking experimentation that the great experimental writers did, the groundbreaking way of using language in a slightly different way, of using structures in a slightly different way. And I try to take that and incorporate it into my 19th century sensibility.
Now, I don't know. I can't recall anything from this novel that struck me as being more modernist or experimental. Can you remember anything? Because I actually can't.
Well, I mean, sort of a silly example in a way is that every chapter title, all the words begin with the letter A in every chapter title throughout the novel.
Hey, guess what I missed, ladies and gentlemen?
And so that's sort of like a Nabokovian game in a way, right? So that's playing through the novel. And it is sort of, as you say, it's sort of a self-conscious modernist game. But I wanted it to sort of speak to a certain amount of play, which is being in the book. And I was quite happy people not necessarily noticing it, as you did.
I did not know that.
Now, here's one. Here's a crazy one, Eric, which is that for those who've read the book, you may not know, but this book has an unusual structure in that it tells you what happens to the count the day he's committed to the hotel.
Yeah.
It then tells you what happens 1 day later, 2 days later, 5 days later, 10 days later, 3 weeks later, 6 weeks later, 3 months later, 6 months later, 1 year later to the day. And then it tells you what happened 2 years later to the day, 4 years, 8 years, 16 years later to the day. And then it reverses itself. 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, 1 year, 6 months, 3 months, down to 10 days, 5 days, 2 days, 1 day. That's the structure of the book.
I read in an interview that you'd given, you mentioned this, and you call it sort of an accordion structure.
Yes, that's
and
right.
When I realized that you'd done that, I thought, I didn't see that. I didn't notice that.
And again, so that would be something more of a modernist experimental technique, is to take this mathematical rule to structure the book. It only works if it turns out to be the right structure for telling the story. And if it's not noticeable, that's when it really pays off. And so, yes, that's me trying to take, as I say, these modernist sort of tools and try to figure out how do they serve the interest of trying to tell a 19th century story that feels like a contemporary story to a 21st century reader.
When did you we're going to go to another break here before I ask you this question. Let me just say again, we're talking to Amor Towles. That's spelled T-O-W-L-E-S. T-O-W-L-E-S. The book is A Gentleman in Moscow. We'll be right back.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. California Senator Kamala Harris has abruptly withdrawn as a 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful. In a note to supporters, Senator Harris lamented the role of money in politics and, without naming them, took jabs at competitors Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg, whose independent wealth funds their presidential bids. California Representative Duncan Hunter, facing 5 years in prison after pleading guilty to misusing campaign money. Mr. Hunter had changed his not guilty plea in federal court in San Diego earlier today. The House Intelligence Committee releasing its preliminary report on the impeachment proceedings so that the House may vote on the issue before the Christmas break. The GOP members issuing their own report saying that President Trump's interactions with Ukraine's new president, including delayed military aid, was entirely prudent. This is SRN News.
If your family depends on your income and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to selectquote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issue, and company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hi, this is Sebastian Gorka. Over the last few months, my fellow Salem talk show hosts and I have been speaking across the country on the War for America's Soul Tour. Thousands of people have attended these sold-out events in cities across the United States. We talked candidly about the attacks against our Constitution, the push for radical socialism, open borders, and other threats to our republic. Not everyone could get a ticket, so we filmed the events in Sacramento, California, and Tampa, Florida. These were incredible nights with a few surprises. You can now watch the events on demand or even buy the DVD. It's a front row seat to watch me, Dennis Prager, Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Larry Elder, and even Michelle Malkin. We discuss the critical issues that are at stake ahead of our next presidential election, and we give you the truth. To watch it now, go to watchsalemmedia.com. You will be glad you did. That's watchsalemmedia.com.
Hey, folks, the Hughes Corporation, 1973. In case you're scoring at home, I'm sitting here with the author of a spectacular book, A Gentleman in Moscow. His name is Amor Towles, and we're getting to talk about writing and all these kinds of things. There are two things that I noticed in the book. There's a moment, a really moving moment, which I'll let you describe, but where people wait in a long line specifically so they can sneak away to pray in secret. Tell us about that.
that scene, which, as you say, it's a group of women who are waiting in a church which has been reclaimed, so to speak, and turned into a dairy. And what happens is that it turns out that women are going kind of across the city to go to this particular dairy, because when all of the religious artifacts were removed from the church, a mosaic was left behind, and the women in line will let you leave the line and come back to your place in line, which the Russians did not like to do, so that you could go and pray in front of this mosaic kind of in private.
Was it Jesus and the woman taking adultery or the woman at the well, one of those?
Yes. Woman at the well, I think.
Yeah.
But so
yes, that's right.
Yeah. But the that was not in the first draft of the book. I had the great pleasure of getting to know as a young man the much older Harrison Salisbury, who was a great New York Times journalist.
Oh, that's amazing. When I read that someplace in an interview.
Yeah, I threw a bottle in the ocean when I was 8 years old.
Now, this is true.
That's true. Off the coast of New England, and he found it, and we began corresponding, and we corresponded from the time I was 8 till I was 18, and then we met. But so at any rate, when I had finished the novel, I went sort of gathering firsthand accounts of life in Moscow and of life at the hotel. When I do that, I don't research before I write a book. I try to invent the book, write it, and then do the research. That's kind of my process.
And so the Metropole Hotel is a real hotel.
That's right.
And it exists today.
Yes, it does. And so in the search for kind of firsthand accounts, when the first draft was done, I realized that Harrison Salisbury had been the Moscow correspondent for the Times, and he'd spent a lot of time in the hotel. I read his memoir at that point, and in it, that's a story that he tells. And so that's a real story. He was walking through the city, he would sneak out of the hotel to walk the city by himself. This is probably around 1950, right after the Second World War, at the early part of the Cold War.
And, of course, he stumbles. The monster Stalin is in charge.
Yes, and he stumbles on this church and is trying to figure out what all these women are doing there and realizes that this was going on. So, yes, that is a true story.
But it is so moving, and it seems like it would have to be a true story. There's something about it.
Yeah.
But it's really moving to think that even around that time that people would be taking time to sneak away to pray, and it's not as though they couldn't pray any other place, but there's something about, because of the Orthodox Christian world, there's something holy about churches and mosaic. You know, they don't treat it like it's not just a building. But I was just so moved by that, and then to think that you get this. I mean, that's pretty bizarre when you're telling me that you threw a bottle in the ocean, with a note, and it was found by this man, and then years later.
Yeah, 30 years later or whatever, it turns out that he was in the same hotel I was writing about. You know, so, yeah, that's a gift.
That's an amazing – it sounds miraculous, frankly. But I want to talk a little bit about the hotel. But before that, getting back to this issue that there's – you have a wisdom and a nobility of character at the center of this book. You don't pretend as though, you know, there's no meaning to life. And you don't come out in an explicitly religious way, but there's a real dignity to the characters and to how they process things. And I was really struck by the moment early in the book when the count tears up the 1,000 ruble debt or something like that. that the annoying aristocrat, the one who's trying to that he sort of tears it up and puts that guy in his place in a way.
In his youth, yeah.
In his youth, right?
Yeah, he offends
as you're reading it, you're cheering for him because this is an amazing thing that he does. But toward the end of the book, he has this moment of reflection where he thinks maybe I was being too smug.
Yes. No. He absolutely was putting him in his place for his own advantage. And repents about that in a way, right?
Which is that's extraordinary because I would not have expected that. I thought, wow, because Mark Helprin in his book, his character would never repent of that. That's like all of his books are. They're all about these kind of heroic, dashing figures doing the noble thing and screwing the bad guy.
Well, one thing about the book is that it does span 30 years, and so that changes it. If you write a novel that only takes place in 1 year, like Rules of Civility, you can't go through quite the level of self-discovery that you're going to go through over a 30-year time frame. Like, you look at yourself and imagine yourself, you know, when we were at Yale, we knew some things, there was a lot we didn't know, and in our last 5 or 10 years as parents, we've learned a lot that we, you know, would not have known otherwise. So that's a natural thing, I think, when you take a novel and stretch it over 30 years, that you would hope and expect the main characters to be going through periods of self-discovery, looking back on their own actions, looking back on their relationships, their own prejudices, and rethinking them.
Well, as I say, that's right, but it's also rare and beautiful. And I'm so glad that you didn't write this book when you were 25 years old.
Well,
because,
me too.
Because there's a lot of that kind of wisdom in it, which is just beautiful, and I think accessible to everybody. This is not a novel for some people. I would say it's a novel for almost everybody. It's just there's something about it. Now, the two questions, because we just have moments left in this, but when we come back, I want to ask you what you're working on now, and then I want to ask you about the Hotel Metropole. When we come back, more with Amor. Tolls, don't go away. Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. There's something you all need to know about Relief Factor and about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son owners. As you know, they're on a real mission to help as many people as possible get out of pain, and they've been a consistent sponsor of the show for several years. In radio, sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so. It sounds like they're doing super, and then they're gone. Well, not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year, and that's because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain. I'm one of them. Shoulder pain, knee pain, hip pain. And they are now in less or no pain at all. All these people, it's as simple as that. It works. That's why I've joined Pete and Seth on their mission to help you get out of pain today. And the first step is to order the 3-week quick start pack for $19.95. If you're still skeptical, remember, it's not just me. There are tens of thousands of other nice people who would happily tell you to give it a try. It can be done. It could be at your door in just 2 to 3 days. Go to relieffactor.com. Remember, relieffactor.com. It works. It works.
Hi, this is Larry Elder, and over the last few months, my fellow Salem talk show host and I have been speaking across the country at the War for America's Soul Tour. Thousands of people have attended these sold-out events in cities all across the United States. We've talked candidly about the attacks against our Constitution, the push for radical socialism, open borders, and other issues affecting you and our country. Not everybody could get a ticket, so we filmed the event in Sacramento, California, and Tampa, Florida. These were incredible nights with a few surprises. You can now watch the events on demand or even buy the DVD. It's a front row seat to watch me, Dennis Prager, Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Sebastian Gorka, even Michelle Malkin, and me. We discuss the critical issues that are at stake ahead of our next presidential election, and we give you the truth. To watch it now, go to watchsalemmedia.com. You'll be glad you did. That's watchsalemmedia.com.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager. It's been a big year for the Rational Bible, both volumes, Genesis and Exodus. They've been Amazon bestsellers since they were published. Writing these books is my life's work. Many of those who have read the books have called them life-changing. CEOs are now giving the books to their employees as gifts. At a recent event in Dallas, the president of a local company purchased over 500 copies of the Rational Bible Exodus to give to her employees. Regardless of your religious beliefs, or even if you don't have any, I believe it's so important that these books be read. I've asked the folks in the Prager store to give all companies that are buying at least 24 books a 50% discount on autographed copies of the Rational Bible, Genesis, and Exodus. If you're looking for a holiday gift for your employees or clients, go to PragerStore.com and click the banner that says Corporate Discounts. Whatever someone's religious beliefs, they will enjoy these powerful books. Go to PragerStore.com.
G'day, I'm Scott from Plug-In Pest Free. If you have a rodent or pest problem at your home or business, don't spray harmful toxic chemicals. Use Plug-In Pest Free, the electromagnetic pest control device that uses your wiring to get rid of pests fast. Just plug it in. I know a pest controller who was contracted to get rid of a cockroach infestation in a restaurant. He tried everything, even chemicals. Nothing worked. So he bought my Plug-In Pest Free Pro, and a few weeks later, the cockroach problem was well under control, and he was able to keep his contract. Plug-In Pest Free is not a sonic device. It's chemical-free and gets rid of pests safely and effectively for years. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 2-year warranty. Now that's fair dinkum. Order today and get 20% off at gopestfree.com, promo code PEST20. That's gopestfree.com, promo code PEST20. Don't spray and regret. Plug in and forget with Plug-In Pest Free.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen.
Hey, folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Amor Towles. The book is A Gentleman in Moscow. It has received rave reviews, even far beyond my ravings today. It's a spectacular book. Amor, since we just have a few minutes today, I want to ask you two things. First of all, the Hotel Metropole, did it proceed roughly along the lines you describe in here? Is most of that accurate?
Yeah, there's some dates that are shifted left or right, and some things are different. But yes, it was built in 1905. It was one of the only fine hotels in Moscow when the revolution occurred. So it sort of remained a place where if you were an important person coming to Moscow in the 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s, you either ate at, drank at, or slept at the Metropole. So yes, the whole world kind of came
and
went.
So they could fool you into thinking that Russia is not such a bad place.
And they did do that.
That's what they did. And that's why people like Walter Durant.
Yes. They specifically kept luxuries available in the hotel, American jazz music, an American cocktail bar. Young hostesses, because they wanted foreigners to sense that the nation was doing well. You know, their great fear was that the New Yorkers, Londoners, Parisianers would go back to their city and say the revolution's been a failure. So it was a hotel of liberty for
and
sure.
So they love the fact that people like Lillian Hellman can come there and be dramatically fooled and be pro Stalin. But we're not going to go into that now. No. But the hotel. Today is there.
Yes.
So I could go there. Now, I have to think that as a result of the wild sales of this book, lots of people are going there.
Well, the hotel has been great about it. Yes, there are many people who kind of go to the hotel now with the book in hand, and they have a tour that is related to the book. There are drinks at the bar that are drawn from the book.
Oh,
so that's fun.
That's fame, man. Yeah,
when people come to the – I was there not long
ago. Those hideous colored drinks?
That's exactly what they have. Exactly right. But when I was there not long ago, the manager, I said, how's it going? He said, oh, it's going great, except, one thing. And I said, well, what's the problem? And he said, well, because the count in the first pages of the book is sent to live in this attic room in the sixth floor.
People want to see the room.
And they want to see their room.
We only have five floors.
They only have five floors.
You're kidding.
No, I'm serious.
I just made that up.
That's true. And he says, they all want to go to the sixth floor, but there is no sixth floor. But I love the fact that the book takes place in this imaginary space, on the roof.
Don't you think it's about time that these folks built a sixth floor?
Yeah, but maybe they'll get
as an homage and charged extra money to stay in the secret suite
in the one small room.
Going from the one room to the secret room through the wardrobe, as it were you thinking of the Narnia Chronicles?
I wasn't so much, but of course I know the Narnia Chronicles. So in my subconscious, it must have been
there.
Well,
the fact that you're having to pass through coats,
to
get to this secret thing, I thought that was. That was spectacular. Okay, few minutes left.
Yeah.
What, sir, are you working on now? When was this book published?
That was published in 2016.
Okay, so You've had a few years to work on other stuff.
And I am in January, I hope to finish the first draft of my new book, but that'll still take me a while to get to you because I have to revise it from beginning to end a couple of times. But that book is about three 18-year-old boys and an 8-year-old boy who are on their way from Nebraska to New York City in 1954, and the whole book only takes place over 10 days. So very different from A Gentleman in Moscow.
You're a quirky fellow, and that's a high compliment coming from me. That is really outrageous. Now, you are a slow writer, and I don't mean I don't mean that in the way some people might take it, but you really take time to do this. And as I read this book, I thought this had to take a lot of time. This is not the kind of thing anybody can whip off. It took you years and years and years. But do you have a way of writing? Do you write in the mornings? You write in the evenings? How do you?
I have a library. I have the luxury of having a small library in our home, and I am at my desk at 9 a.m. Working every day. You know, by 9 at least, and I will tend to write at my desk for 3 hours, and then I will take the writing from the morning to lunch with me. I'll have lunch alone, and I'll edit the writing from the morning, or I'll bring a notebook and start drafting what I might work on for the next day. So to get me started. So kind of from 9 to 2, I'm at it. And it takes me, as I said, maybe a year to a year and a half to do a first draft. But then it might take me 2 years of revision to get the book to where I really want it to be.
You're wonderfully methodical. I have to say that I am dramatically not methodical. And I'm not proud of that at all. There's some people, you know, like they have the Jack Kerouac model. And I think I'm not at all proud of the way that I write. I'm usually happy with what I end up with, but I've always wanted to write the way you've just described.
Okay.
And there are times when I can do something like that. But is this something you just imposed upon yourself? How did you come to that?
I came to it later in life, and that's because I wrote my first novel while I still had a job and while we had children who were quite young. So it was either be very specific about when you write and be productive when you have the time, or don't do it at all. You really don't have much choice in those circumstances. So I kind of learned how to be very disciplined given that.
And we just got a minute or so left. Why did you choose this subject of the three 18-year-olds and the 8-year-old? And it seems very random.
I don't pick a topic, research it, and then write a book. What I do is I pick a topic that's grounded in a period that I'm very interested in, or a set of topics I'm interested in. And I think the mid-50s in America is an amazing period. You know, it's when rock and roll is invented. I mean, basically in 1954 is the first rock and roll song. It's when TV is become a part of American culture. It's when everybody has come back from the war and is being integrated into kind of this new cohesive American society where people are getting to college for the first time in their family's histories because of the GI Bill and moving to the suburbs and becoming, naming their kids, you know, Billy and Jenny and eating the standard American foods. You know, it was sort of this great rush to conformity going on in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And you had the Cold War was running, and so you have a lot of different things happening, and that makes it a fun landscape for me to investigate.
And I love the fact that in A Gentleman in Moscow, you talk about classic films.
Yes.
And, I mean, that's one of the funnier parts of the book, this idea of Osip, this Soviet guy watching these American films. And I have to ask you before we close, are you a fan of Turner classic movies?
Sure. I love the movies of the 30s and the 40s. It's probably my favorite era for film.
Mine too. And I think that comes across. It's one of the reasons I liked the book, is because if you like to watch those kinds of movies, reading this book is a lot like watching one of those movies. In other words, you've succeeded dramatically in a number of things. So, Amor, thank you so much for being my guest. I really do hope we can continue this conversation about at least your other book and many other things. Thank you
Anytime,
so much.
Anytime, Eric. It was a real pleasure to be here.
What is it costing you in vet bills for that convenience of just pulling open a bag of
formulated, extruded, processed cereal bits that cost a ton of money anyways?
How do you feed your dog to derive not only energy, but a good coat, bright eyes, and a great attitude?
Come to Dynavite for help.
DINOVITE.com.
I found his raw meat diet on Dynavite.com.
With just the raw meat and the eggs and the Dynavite and the Super Omega on top of it.
Try Super Omega Fish Oil.
Buy two, get one free.
Ground beef, white rice, eggs, including the shells, and the Dynavite supplement, and then a Lico Chop.
Try Lico Chops. Buy two, get one free.
It just balances out his body and his mind and his spirit.
Adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
Their skin is so much better now that they're on the raw diet. I don't even give them the kibble anymore.
Dinovite .com.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Senator Kamala Harris ending her presidential bid.
The announcement comes after her campaign drastically cut staff in October, funneling most of her campaign's resources toward working on a strong victory in Iowa and leaving other early voting states such as New Hampshire and South Carolina with minimal staffing and funding. On the campaign trail, Harris's record as District Attorney of San Francisco and later Attorney General of California became a frequent area of criticism from her fellow presidential contenders. As a presidential candidate, Harris's team sought to highlight her efforts as a progressive prosecutor who championed criminal justice reform and held the powerful accountable.
Bernie Bennett reporting from Capitol Hill. The House Intelligence Committee has released its impeachment report. The committee is scheduled to a vote to approve the report tonight. The House Judiciary Committee is scheduling its first hearing tomorrow on the legalities of impeachment. The Dow is down 277 points. This is SRN News.
Couldn't sleep at night. All I could think about was my credit card debt.
I knew I couldn't get a loan, so the thought of owning a home or a new car seemed totally out of the question.
I was afraid to answer the phone, and I dreaded the mail.
It just felt like my credit card debt was this deep pool, and I was just drowning in it.
This might be you right now, and you should know you're not alone.
There is hope.
Right now, certified counselors at Trinity Debt Management are standing by and ready to help you, not judge you.
One call to 1-800-990-6976, and you'll find hope to live your life out from under the weight of credit card debt.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment.
Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges. Reduce your interest and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976.
Ooh, Merry Christmas,
Christmas comes this time each year.
Ooh,
well, way up north where the air gets cold, there's a tale about Christmas that you've all been told. And a real famous cat all dressed up in red, and he spends the whole year working out in his sled. It's the losing
I'm glad I love Christmas music because we're playing it all month, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
I have become one of those people that I hate, the people who start Christmas too early.
Yeah.
But you know what? We've got a lot of Christmas stuff to talk about. First of all, we got the TBN special coming up. We still don't have the air dates. Ladies and gentlemen, prepare to have your minds blown. Boom. I'm not kidding. Albin, you know.
I know.
You know, like, we're going to start releasing stuff on social media just to show you that we're not blowing smoke. You're not going to believe it.
They're advertising the new James Bond movie. Well, we're going to be advertising the new Christmas special for
That's right.
I think
this Christmas special is going to lead to some crazy stuff. I'm just warning you, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be on TV. You need to know where TBN is on your dial. You need to make sure you know in advance, because you're not going to want to look for it. And you can say, oh, it's on now. Wait. Trust me, you don't want to miss the opener. The opener to this Christmas special will curl your hair. Mm-hmm. And if your hair is already curly, it will curl it the further.
Ooh.
Yes, it is absolutely the opening. Albin, you're in the opening.
I am.
And you play a street urchin. We can't go into it now.
But ladies and gentlemen,
you don't want to miss the opening. You don't want to say, oh, I tuned in like 7 minutes. The opening is the most insane part of the whole thing. So you need to go to your TV and find out where TBN is. I'm telling you, for your own good, don't miss it. And let me tell you, by the way, one of the advertisers on the show is Mike Lindell. Okay, he comes on, he makes a surprise appearance. It's not a surprise to you because I just told you, but he makes a surprise appearance. He's one of the main sponsors on the show. But you know that he's a sponsor on this show. And since Christmas is coming up, We want to encourage you to go to MyPillow.com and to order all your Christmas gifts there today after you have purchased copies of my books, especially Donald Drains the Swamp and Donald Builds the Wall. After you've done that,
yes,
you go to MyPillow.com, you order all the stuff, you use our code, Eric, mm-hmm. you save huge, mm-hmm. and you're done. Christmas shopping,
yeah.
check it off. Done.
Yes.
Okay.
The towels, by the way, Ann and I both said after using them, wow, they're not just soft, they're absorbent.
And the guy who we just talked to for 2 hours, his name is Amor Tolles. But it looks like towels.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidence?
I think
that's the universe's way of telling you.
Yes.
Order towels from Mike Lindell's MyPillow.com.
I
love when people say the universe, they replace God with the universe, right? I think the universe is trying to send me a message. Why does the universe care about you existing?
Hey, you, I'm the universe.
I don't want to talk about God, so I'm going to say the universe. Yeah, whatever.
Ooh-hoo.
Yeah, the universe. So, folks, The towels are seriously amazing because towels have one stinking job.
That's it.
Okay. Most towels don't perform that job very well. Well, Mike Lindell's new towels perform the job spectacularly. It's almost funny that he had to reinvent the towel so they do their job better. Yeah. But they actually are so absorbent. They'll suck the water out of your water glasses if you leave them in the room with filled water glasses. They're so absorbent, it's shocking.
One more time, though. CSI, you're going to have money left over for sure. CSI needs your help.
Actually, you go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the thing there, and you'll see it. So we're asking you to give money to CSI, and we're asking you to purchase for yourselves and your friends, illimitable towels, as many towels and sheets and things as you can from Mike Lindell. He's a hero. He's a big hero. And you got to use the code Eric. Hey, I think we're done.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
This has been swell. Alvin, let's do this tomorrow.
Okay, let's do it.